Light Transitions Radio is a dialogue about personal and planetary change. Acknowledging that we are all at unique points on a continuum of change, Light Transitions Radio seeks out innovators and creators, engages them in spontaneous and deep dialogues, and shares these conversations with the world. Light Transitions Radio's mission is to help individuals and communities achieve positive transformation.
Hello, everyone. My name is Robert Davis, and I would like to thank you for joining us today at Light Transitions Radio. Well, it's an extreme honor for me to welcome Francis Morlepay to Light Transitions Radio. Welcome, Francis.
Thank you so much, Robert.
And for today's topic, I guess we'll just start with how can we change the planet and allow the planet to transform immediately will kind of be our topic. And Francis has had a historic running start at answering the question of transformation and possibilities for many, many years. And it's moved to the current work of EcoMind. But before I jump into that, I just wanted to mention my own personal understanding of Francis's work over the years. And there's so many individuals that I think of when I think of Francis, and it's in the context of the Buckminster Fullers and the Lewis Mumfords and the Hazel Hendersons and on and on and on, just the luminaries that have really held the torch at a great height and allowed us all to vision and envision possibilities for positive change. So again, Francis, I just wanted to say that at the onset. Thank you.
I'm so excited to talk to you, and thank you for that lovely introduction.
So in looking at, again, your latest work, which has evolved to the context of really looking at this whole system as being one system, and there's a process of evolution afoot, albeit the Pierre Teilhard de Chardin models or any models we want to draw from that show a concurrent evolution of spirit along with the physical manifestation of life. And it's that time of wedding that spirit with the understanding of our times, which you bring and clearly illuminate continuously. It's in working through fear, I believe, and scarcity, as you've brought up in your book. How can we look at that and embrace that as a learning and understand how to move through that?
Well, first of all, just recognizing, I think, is the first step, just recognizing the role of fear in our lives, for good and bad, but the dominant way that fear is used to keep us from seeing possibility. And the big change for me came during a period, it was a dark night of the soul, some call it, when everything seemed to be falling apart, and I myself experienced a lot of fear, and I started realizing then, seeing the world through that fear lens, and started thinking, wait a minute, how do we remake that? So should I keep going?
Oh, yeah.
I can go on and tell you about the whole book I wrote about fear. It's called You Have the Power. But it really, the big aha for me was the realization that our very social nature, which is more and more documented by psychologists and anthropologists and neuroscientists, our social nature has a double edge, and that is that we evolved as social creatures, learning that separation from the tribe was almost certain death, and so separating from the pack, being different from others, we're hyper-social. In other words, being different is really scary for most of us, and yet you and I are alive at this time when the hyper tribe, I'd like to think of it as, when the dominant global most visible tribe is going over the falls, you know, then wait, separating from the pack is no longer about death. It's about life. You know, how do we break loose so that we can affirm life? And it still brings up a lot of fear. And so the bottom line here is that we can re-experience fear as pure energy, as just information, rather than as a verdict or a barrier. And that is really the theme running through all of my writing and all of my thinking and all of my life. And so I have this corny, kind of cheesy a reframe that I do on myself when I feel that pounding heart, you know, the thump, 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 thump. And I used to say, oh, Frankie, you know, you wimp. And now, Robert, I say, oh, that's inner applause going off. You know, I'm right at that edge where I should be. And I think that we can really encourage each other in so many ways, and recognize that courage is contagious, that when we see others that we can identify stepping up and speaking out, it empowers us.
Well, and that separation of community has now, you know, I think taken on, it's even a brighter light of separation with source and spirit as being part of that community. So in that fearlessness, in that recognition of fearlessness, we are often invited to embrace spirit as an ally in assisting us through those moments of the dark night of the soul. And the fearlessness that we gain as a result is so clearly evident in so many individuals' lives now, like yourself, because it brings an energy of renaissance and rejuvenation that allows us to connect with others that are also feeling that same spirit. It is a remarkable time. The evolution of the producer-consumer model, as we look at how we feed people, and it's now about feeding people the whole person. It's the spirit all the way down through the physical component of a person that needs to be fed and is ready to be fed. That's the
experience. Yeah. Let me just say that if you will forgive me for this, but that I really react when I hear people talking about feeding people.
Yeah.
Because it's the languaging still keeps us in the idea that there are these people somewhere just waiting for us to solve their problem.
Thank you.
When in reality, all of the world are people who 70% of the world's food is produced by small farmers. People, if they have half a chance, are incredibly creative and powerful. So it's really removing the obstacles to people feeding themselves and not about our feeding them. So I just wanted to, it's really about power understood, not as a bad thing, not as control, but power understood as creativity, generativeness, you know, our capacity to act, efficacy, those good things.
So the blooming of that communitization process of individuals and communities learning to empower themselves to take care of themselves. Are there programs that you're involved at Small Planet Institute that helps facilitate communities and looking at templates of degree days? How many kilocalories of food are available within the environs of that community? And how can that food be delivered to a central off-grid community kitchen that can process and extend the shelf life of those goods?
Well, let me just start out by saying that, of course, there now is, you know, there's enough food produced for every person on Earth, enough food available for every person on Earth to make us all chubby, that the problem is not supply. In fact, and that's even after we subtract the waste of a third of all food and feeding a third of all grain to livestock. So the reality is plenty. The challenge really is at the level of how do we envision a democratic, that to me means an empowered economy so that power is dispersed and small farmers can thrive and support one another and cooperatives can grow. So that to me is the challenge, so that that urban farms can spring up and we can reestablish farms around urban centers and therefore provision ourselves with healthy food nearby. So that's really my own, you know, maybe you had a very detailed vision that you just articulated. Mine is less detailed, but it has to do with this participation, I mean, it's embodied in the community-supported agriculture model, which I'm part of, and it's all over the country now, starting here in Massachusetts, but where people are not only just consumers of food, but we are co-creators in the sense that we invest before the growing season in the farm, you know, a few hundred dollars in order to have fresh produce all summer. So we are in a sense co-farmers. You know, we're not just consumers.
So individuals could go to your website and find out the type of templates that are now in place from a financial modeling perspective to get involved in supporting community growth farming systems. Is that correct?
Well, all of our books, I mean, our work is not, our work is, we don't run programs, so to speak.
Right.
Our work is we believe, our premise is that the world is the way it is, that none of us individually, you know, the question we ask is why are we together creating a world that not one of us as individuals would choose? And our conclusion is that it's because of very mental maps that aren't grounded in evidence, that are they're an inherited maps of fear and scarcity. And so our work, our website at smallplanet.org, is all about stories of real evidence-based developments all over the world. All of our books are about this, helping us break free of the dominant, what I call the scarcity mind that limits our sense of possibility. So yes, I mean, you'll go to our website, you'll see all sorts of articles, all sorts of books, that all sorts of news stories, list of, you know, other websites, etc. And the end of our books are all full of news of magazines, you know, like Yes Magazine, for example.
Yes.
And e-letters that you can bring into your email every day, where you are seeing examples of people like yourself really engaged in solutions. And a lot of it is around food, but not just about food. It's also, we have, my new book also has stories in energy production, for example, and on and on. So, yes.
Well, this process is, I believe, snowballing of all around us in a qualitative way. And it's in really, I think, allowing the information to be disseminated cleanly and clearly so that all the people that are interested can access that information. Are you looking at any other models for information dissemination besides your website and your books? Any short documentaries or any shows in the upcoming future?
My daughter is now just completing a video, which is going to be very positive and informative for the internet. And I don't know if we have a name for it yet, but on our Small Planet website, we're going to be, you know, all you have to do is go to Small Planet, and if you sign up there for our quarterly e-letter, you will hear about that video. And and it's a whole series of videos probably that she's going to be doing. And you can see also our videos of our talks as well. And there are all sorts of resources there on the website.
In your kind of immediate canvassing of where we are and the ability to see, I guess, into the future, as you always have, what do you see in the short term as far as food systems and just their general evolution? We talked about urban farming and then the community farm systems. How do you feel about the development of off-grid community kitchens? I feel drawn myself to really try to speak up as much as I can to get communities to really develop a processing center that is viable for their local environs. Are there communities developing those type of systems?
Well, I've been in a number of communities where people are talking about that as a very real need. I was in Iowa, and I was in Wisconsin recently, and just people talking about the demise of small processing so that to support a diversified farms, that once everything shifts over to corn and soy, then what are gone are the facilities like that to really support people who are growing vegetables and diversifying. So
yes.
I agree with you that that's a very important need. I'd love to have it's more people identifying it and setting that target, and they've probably accomplished it, but I don't know where, and I'd love it if you would let me know if you find examples, because I agree with you, it's extremely important.
Yes, well, I keep talking about it, but I've been talking about a lot of things for years.
I would love to track that, because I bet it's happening more than we think. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Well, again, it's always been a passion of mine, and as well as I'm also quite involved with industrial hemp right now, as far as trying to get that developed in the United States as a viable commodity. So there are major chains afoot. And are there any other groups that you work with? I know you've worked with just about everybody, but looking at the Rocky Mountain Institute and John Todd and some of these folks, is there any consortium of individuals working on any particular agenda at this moment?
Well, one of the groups that I'm a member of, actually I'm proud to say that I was a founding member, it's called the World Future Council.
Okay.
And it's easy to find on the web. It's based in Hamburg, Germany. And we, one of the things that we do, it's 50 people from all over the world, World Future Council, and we highlight what have been the most successful policy changes, changing the rules to ignite, for example, sustainable energy, and then popularize that in a way, create booklets and awards to highlight, and then that people can take in their communities, in their countries, to move their own legislative assemblies to adopt these sorts of policies. And one, for example, is a policy called feed-in tariff, which I call the reward renewables legislation. And do you realize that mainly as a result of legislative framework that rewards renewable energy, that in 2010, Germany, cloudy Germany, which is about 1/25th or something like that of the size of the U.S. in terms of, you know, land area, that Germany produced almost half of the solar energy of the entire world. So it just shows you what's possible. And we have an annual awards program, and 2 years ago it was to the city of Belo Horizonte, which my daughter and I write about in the book Hope's Edge. And there's an example of how the city mayor in the 90s won the election on the platform of food as a human right, food as a right of citizenship. And they were and talk about, you know, your idea of a kitchen. Well, in Belo, they've done many, many things to make healthy food available to people and reduce their infant mortality rate by more than half. And one of the things we visited was this enormous open-air restaurant that did not feel like a, demeaning soup kitchen at all.
Wow.
That feeds hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people every day, and everybody from soldiers to poor families. And they had newspapers pinned up on the wall so that people who couldn't afford the newspaper could keep up with the news. Fantastic meals from local farmers. And really so many examples of what can be done. So that's the kind of thing that we highlight. I was just speaking to the worldfuturecouncil.org, and that's the kind of program we celebrate.
Well, it sounds almost like an evolved version of what was once called the Club of Rome.
It's still, Club of Rome is still cooking.
Is
still
it?
Doing its thing.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, you know, my heart always goes back to the New Alchemy Institute and the Farlones Institute, and
absolutely, my heroes.
There you go. All that. Well, you were, as I said, you were always in the mix for all of that.
So. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Well, again, we are right where we are, and I'm encouraged, Frances, that you've had the indefatigable spirit, along with so many, to really hold that vision and really be patient.
I'm not patient, but fortunately, we all have to. You were speaking earlier of spirit, and I think for most of us, or at least I can't speak for most of us, for me, the spirit that is the ineffable quality of love and life, that life loves life of the universe, that comes through to me through other human beings. And so I've been so incredibly fortunate in this short life, to meet people directly, like Wangari Maathai, the Nobel Peace Prize winner in 2004, who became really my lodestar of courage. She passed away last year. And so I carry her with me, and I think I do believe that we change ourselves by the people that we bring into our lives, and that gives us enormous power to bring into our lives. Even if we can't meet them directly, we can read about them and honor them and find people in our neighborhoods who exude that sort of spirit of possibility and courage, and we become more like them as we associate with them. And I like to say at the end there, and marry them if you can, really get them close, give birth to them. That's what I've done.
One of my visions is to go from person to person throughout an entire day and have that experience.
Yes.
That's my heaven on earth model.
I love it. That's great.
Well, again, I just really want to thank you so much again for so much, and would want to offer you a closing statement on these times, mid-2012, before what has been prophesied in many, many cultures and in many ways, a time of tremendous change, and how you see this change unfolding.
Well, I'm not a seer in that sense. I have no predictive powers. All I know is that life loves life, and yeah. Nature's on our side. And we have to do is embrace what nature is offering us. There is more than enough for each of us. We have more than enough goodness in us if we create the rules to bring that forth, because we're like every organism in the environment, and that we respond. Most of us respond for good or evil with whether the stimuli around us is encouraging one of those two choices. And so, we know now how to create the world that we want, and it's a matter of our believing that we have the courage in us to create the conditions to bring forth that. And so That's all that matters to me, is that it's not possible from this perspective. It's not possible to know what's possible, because everything is changing moment to moment if you really understand ecology, and we're all connected if you really understand ecology. So therefore, we don't know what the tipping points ultimately are, what the leverage points, but we do know that everything we do and don't do has tremendous effect. The only choice we don't have is whether to change the world. So, we might as well choose the positive and just leave the outcome to that which will be. But we know that our choices influence that outcome.
Yes. Well, I would like to offer a heartfelt thank you to Francis Moore LePay, who I view as a true planetary emissary.
Oh, thank you so much.
For joining me today. For more information on Francis and her work at Small Planet Institute, we'll have the link, www.smallplanetinstitute, on our site, and others pertaining to today's show on our website, lighttransitionsradio.com. If you'd like to comment on today's show, please visit our website or email us at comment@lighttransitionsradio.com. Thank you for probably the 10th time during this interview, Francis, and just put a few dots after that, and continued brilliance and energy on all your efforts.
Oh, thank you so much. It's really uplifting to talk to you.